Hey cousin, welcome to Coco Conjure. Here we discuss all things hoodoo, folklore, and spiritual journeys. My goal is to give foundation to the novice and inspiration to the advanced practitioner. If you haven't guessed already, my name is Coco. Listen, do you hear that? That's the sound of someone subscribing. Is it you, cousin? Did you just subscribe? If you haven't, I want to remind you it's free. Go ahead, touch the button. If you have, thanks, cousin. I promise I'm going to save you some banana pudding at the cookout. Okay, cousin. I struggled hardcore with today's episode. I've been writing an episode on animism since before I hit publish on the very first episode. We talking like a little less than a year ago. I opened up a Word doc, typed animism is in like bold letters, then just stared at the screen for like 5 minutes with complete writer's block, full panic up my neck. It was bad. Even now, I can feel the anxiety creeping up on me because every time my mind gets going, I start thinking about how animism fits into my personal cosmology, like how I think the world works spiritually. And I say often I never want to really talk about my cosmology in depth. And sometimes I might give like little tiny tidbits here or there. But at this point, I'm just going to go for it. Like, whatever. I'm just going to go for it. So from this point forward, I want you to know that these, some of them are just facts, like definitions. But for the most part, these are my views on how I feel the spiritual world works. This is the lens through which I view spiritual work. I'm not trying to sway you. I'm not trying to change your mind. I just want to share my view with you and talk a little bit about animism and its place in our practice. And to be honest with you, I'd love to hear a little bit about animism in your practice. So if you want to leave a comment, if you want to leave me an email, I'm totally open to the discussion. Okay, so animism. What is animism? Animism is, believe it or not, animism is a foundation to most folk practices, especially hoodoo. The textbook definition is the belief of a soul or an attribution of a soul to plants, inanimate objects, and natural phenomena. So the belief that everything in nature has a spirit and varying degrees of life and personhood. So the concept of this has been around since people have been peopling, right? It's easier, it's more beneficial to think that there's something going bump in the night so we can protect ourselves, right? Even if we can't see what the something is, than to assume there's nothing going bump in the night and then we all die off as a species, right? Right. So like it's something that's been around for a while. The man that coined the term, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I'll leave some information in the show notes. But the man who coined that term did so in to compare like African or indigenous or non-Christian practices to Christianity. And it was racist. There's no other way around that. But he was racist. The whole concept of it when he came out with it was racist. However, the word animism accurately describes how people may spiritually view the world. Even if we remove the racism out of it, it's still being used today. The concept is still being kicked around today because it's accurate in description, even though the intention was malicious. Yeah. Okay, so let's think of it practically. So like the crystals you may have kicking around on your altar or coffee table right now, animism expresses that these crystals have a spirit. And spiritually, you'll hear people say that when they touch them, if the person is sensitive enough, they can feel the spirit of that crystal, right? Or when you take your black walnut bath, as you scrub down, you are covering yourself with the spirit of that plant. So when we work roots and hoodoo, and working roots can be actual roots or other fetishes like alligator paw, raccoon penis, that etc. That's what we're doing. You have an understanding of what the root does, and you are utilizing that spirit of that plant or object as a medicine or a fix to your situation. This is why I say animism is the cornerstone to an effective hoodoo practice, right? Because hoodoo, conjure, is the dealing of spirits, right? It's the understanding that we can utilize the spirits around us to better our lives, okay? Okay, so I take it a step further, and that's why I was having a hard time outlining this episode. I take it a step further and say that the spirit of that object, thing, person, plant, whatever, can be described by its nature. For example, you don't have to tell fire to burn. It just burns, right? So chemical reactions get going and the flame gives off heat. And if something touches it, the flame will want to devour this new fuel source. That's what fire does. That's its nature. That's its spirit. So here's where I get into trouble. So if you look up, I don't know, different correspondences, or you talk to a traditionalist, they sometimes contradict the observable nature of a spirit with what their correspondence is. The first example I ever came across with this is mint. So if you look up mint in a hoodoo plant correspondence book or ask a traditional hoodoo worker, they'll tell you that mint is used for protection. You plant it outside your home for protection. You can burn it in your home for protection. Like, this is what it's used for. This is what it has been used for amongst many workers. And this aspect of mint's spirit has been utilized for that purpose for generation to generation. Okay. Protection, spiritual protection. But when I started to grow my own garden and I got 4 different species of mint, realized that mint is not just peppermint. It's a family of plants. I realized as I nurtured these plants that it's within mint's nature to spread, to grow. Not grow like all plants want to grow, but I mean like it's within its nature to literally do anything to thrive and survive, to put down roots. It's within its nature. So I can neglect the mint. I can overwater the mint. It does not matter. It wants to leap out of its pot and spread. And if you're silly enough to put it in the ground, mint gets downright invasive. I know I've said this to you guys like a lot of times, that if you plant mint, do not put it in the ground because it'll take over your whole yard. It's a prosperous plant. To me, it's in mint's nature to spread. It's in mint's nature to be prosperous. So without instruction from a traditionalist, at the beginning of my hoodoo journey, I utilized mint's spirit in my money work because I want my money to be as prosperous as mint. I want it to grow in abundance, right? It's also in mint's spirit to heal. If I have a headache, before it gets too bad, I drink mint tea or I suck on a peppermint candy. If my stomach is upset, I get a ginger mint, right? Like, I'm not afraid to reach for a leave if it's a migraine, or reach for, you know, some nausea medication. But if it's, you know, just a simple tension headache, or if it's just a little like I ate too fast, let me sip or chew or suck on some mint, right? So as a root worker, removing the conjure aspect, like when I say I deal with mint and my money work, that's a conjuring thing, right? But removing the conjure aspect, just as a root worker, it's in mint's nature to heal. It's in mint's nature to soothe, right? And that gets me in trouble. It gets me in trouble because I know that to be the nature of the plant, scientifically proven, mint will always do these things. Spiritually, in my practice, mint does this thing. But a hoodoo traditionalist, hoodoo in tradition, I should say, will contradict that. It's not for that. You use it primarily for protection. So what do you follow? Do you follow the correspondence that workers over time have tested? Or do you follow the nature of the plant as you've observed it? Or do you do both? And I know that I feel as though correspondence, spiritual correspondence, is flexible. Again, this is what gets me in trouble, because when you go from source to source, people will say different things, but the nature of that plant will always remain the same. It'll always do that thing. Do you understand? So yeah, the nature of a plant are aspects of its spirit. It's its spirit functioning in the world around us, just like how you have a nature. We as people have a nature, right? It's in my nature to be creative. It's in my nature to reach for anxiety first. I have to untrain myself from certain things because it's within my spirit to behave a certain way, right? So we're the same. So think, when you think of plants and you think of crystals and you think of the earthly, earthbound spirits as an animist, I personally challenge you to think of the nature of that thing. How does it behave? And respect that as a part of its spirit. Its spirit and expression, really. So when we do work, we utilize the spirit of whatever we're working with, flame, water, plants, fetishes. We're utilizing the spirit of that, whether that spirit has been tried and true, tested, cultivated by our ancestors and how they did work, or whether you are trying something new or trying to really tap into what you observe that spirit to be. It doesn't matter. Both have its merits. Both are very important. Both hold power, both ways to look at it. But that's what we do when we do work. It's not just, let me rub this candle with oil. There's a reason why, right? We are tapping into, utilizing, conjuring the spirits of the things we're using. Okay, so here's a cocoa cosmology thing. This is something that I've observed in hoodoo as a practice, and it revolutionized how I practiced once I understood it. We engage with the spirit of the plant or object through energy. So I'm not talking about the woo-woo, oh, the energy in the room, oh, the energies, bad energies, negative, positive energies. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about actual physical movement. I'm talking about kinetic energy, right? So when you're doing a cleansing bath, sure, you may sit in the bath and you get your herb pouch and you make a bath tea and you light your candles around the tub and toss in some white rose petals. And I see it for you, cousin. It's very aesthetic. It's very demure. It's very luxurious. I love that for you. However, if you want to engage with the spirit of those plants in your herb tea, you cover yourself with it by moving it over your body, right? If you are doing a cleansing, you're taking that washcloth or and moving that water, that tea over your body, or you're pouring it over yourself. This is the act of covering. Utilize, you're utilizing the spirits of the plant as well as engaging with your own spirit. You're engaging these things via the energy that you expend from the movement. I'm not saying wash yourself raw. I'm just saying that sitting in a bath is very passive. And especially in a bath, when water gets stagnant, it collects grossness. And if you are doing a cleansing, you are soaking in your spirit's filth in stagnant water, right? This is why we always say you don't just soak and sit in your bath. You have to make it an active thing. You have to engage with the spirits. And you do that by expending your own energy, by bringing your spirit to it by moving. This goes with candles as well. The reason why I don't worry so much about the color of a candle when I work is because the flame and the energy it gives off is way more important to me than the color. You're gonna hear people say, oh, well, you know, color is also a spirit. I'm not going to disagree with you if that's how you want to look at it. But I don't think so. I think color is the color in the world around us is the, oh, how do I want to say this? Color is a result of spirit, right? It's the result of spirit doing spirit things. Not everything sees color like how we see, right? So I don't worry so much about color. Like the leaves can be green, but where I'm at in the fall, they start turning orange and yellow. That's the spirit of the plant going through death, right? The color is a byproduct. It's not the spirit itself, at least for me. Again, I'm speaking from my personal cosmology here. So when I work with candles, I'm working with the flame. I'm working with the spirit of fire. The wax, whatever else I dress the candle with, becomes fuel for the flame. And the energy of the flame, the act of burning, transforms the work, the spirits that I've coated that candle with, from something tangible to something intangible, from something physical to something that can penetrate the spiritual world around us. You feel what I'm saying? Another example of energy as kinetic movement in hoodoo is the ring shout. Dancing in the circle, the calling and response in the singing. The energy is being expended so we can engage our own spirits. So we can engage with the spirits we're calling to. Calling upon or giving praise to guiding spirits in our life. The ring shout, the dance, the singing. Hell, when I want to conjure the spirits that guide me or give thanks to the ancestors, I will pull out some drums or maraca or throw on some old Negro spirituals, and I move and I sing and I do a church stomp, right? Like it is a physical thing, right? I am giving of myself. I am using what's within my spirit. I'm adding the energy so that way the energy of my movement so I can engage with the spirits around me, so I can give thanks, so I can call them in, so I can, utilize them in whatever I'm doing or whatever it is. It's my spirit, their spirit, and movement. That's the equation, right? Like you got to be moving. You have to do something. Movement doesn't always have to be, you know, a big dance either. It can also be the energy you give can also just be your words. That's why I believe in speaking psalms. That's why I believe in prayer, even though I'm not Christian. I understand that when I speak, it is an expression of my spirit, plus the energy it takes for my body, for my voice to come through my throat, past my teeth, right? It is a energy thing for me. So, yeah, that's a different way to think about it. Energy is engaging physically, with the spirits around us. It's not the nebulous vibe in a room, right? As a matter of fact, that nebulous vibe of any place, according to animistic thought, is the spirit of that place. So instead of saying the energy of the room, we can say the spirit of the room. Okay, so to me, the spirit of a place is a collection of action, smaller spirits, you know, that are around, and emotion, right? Human emotion. You ever walk into a space and it just feels like home? Or you know for a fact that someone had a full argument, right? Like, you know that already. When I walked into my new place, it felt empty. Like there was no spirit in the walls. So I did my home blessing. I protected my space. I filled the space with smaller spirits that promote peace and joy and comfort. Then I started to treat the home like it was alive. I spoke to it when I came and I went. I dedicated myself as a keeper of its temple. I gave a piece of myself to it as I cleaned, as I cleansed, as I did my magic. And then a couple days ago, when my mom comes over, she says to me, "Oh man, it feels really good in here." And it does, because the spirit of my home feels cozy and comfortable and happy, and I had to cultivate that. Or think of a church service. You have people singing, the drummer is hitting hard, the guy on the piano is doing all the extra stuff, people are shouting, and especially if you're in a black church, there's the call and response from the pastor to the congregation. The choir just did a key change, right? And the swell of emotion went through the room. There's life in that place. The prayers and the blessings seeped into the walls, seeped into the floor, seeped into the ground outside of the church. All of this goes towards cultivating a spirit for that building. That's why we pick up church dirt and bank dirt and graveyard dirt. It's within the spirit of the earth, within its nature, if you will, to hold things. You put it in the ground and it stays in the ground until an outside force transforms it. Combine that with the spirit of the church, a place alive with joy and blessing, and you can use that church dirt to conjure up all of those spirits to call in blessing. You can use it for that. That's also why people get freaked out when they go to graveyard or old houses, because their spirit reacting with the spirit of that place doesn't go well. Right? Do you feel what I'm saying? So places can also have spirit, and we cultivate that. Okay, so I'm going to go a little bit deeper into my cosmology as an animistic hoodoo. Certain spirits that we interact with don't need to be cultivated. They are not of this earth. They just are. They are. They always have been. They always will be. These spirits are like spirits of death, spirits of the spirit of wealth, life, creativity, even the spirit of a crossroad. We lose people, we lose ourselves, we suffer through change. That's the spirit of death. That spark that wakes you up every morning, your memories, your experiences, how that informs how we engage with the world around us, that's life. In order to survive, our minds need to apply solutions to problems. So we create and we build. That's a spirit of creativity. And, you know, it's not enough to just survive. We need to thrive. In order to be comfortable in our existence, we need an overflow of resources. That's wealth. And before we can utilize any of these spirits in our life, death, wealth, life, creativity, we find ourselves at a crossroad. Multiple paths to follow. Multiple choices to make. There are many other guides or overarching spirits like love and desire, like luck and greed. These spirits are unseen forces of nature. They fuel how we move through the world, right? These spirits are building blocks to our existence. Intangible they may be, we can see the effects of these spirits in our lives. Sometimes we even deify them. We give them names like Yahweh or Oshun or Ra. And that's okay. That's good. That's humans understanding divine power as best as we can. No one is, you know, no one of those divine powers is exactly like any other. Each is an aspect of an overarching spirit that I described earlier. Each a divine being, culturally significant, and should not be removed from its cultural understanding. Giving them names, giving them offering, giving them our worship. These are ways that we engage with those spirits. These are the spirits that lead us, that build us up. These are the spirits that only can be seen by the effect in our lives. So I call those divine spirits. These are the divine spirits in our life. Whether you interact with them as a god or a god archetype, or if you're just, you know, completely non-theistic like me, not religious, not theistic, and you just express it as its overarching, you know, spirit, like death, like life. It doesn't matter how you approach it. These are still divine spirits. They cannot be cultivated. They just are, and they always will be. So yeah, animism is the view that the world is filled with persons that don't necessarily look like persons, that aren't necessarily alive like we are alive. Everything has spirit, and I believe that spirit and energy are not the same thing. Spirit is the nature of a person, place, thing, or divine concept. Sometimes the spirit is seen, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's cultivated, sometimes it just is. Energy is something we do to engage with these spirits, the watering of plants, the burning of incense, the washing of our bodies, the shouting of prayers. Energy is action. And I also deposit that there are different types of spirit around us. There's earthly spirits like plants, animals, elements. We can cultivate a spirit in a place or in a container like a mojo. And of course, there are different spirits, divine spirits like life and death, that we sometimes will deify, like your Yemayas or whoever it is you give offering to. Those divine spirits are necessary to the building blocks of our existence. They are, and we are, and we coexist together, right? Of course, there's the ancestral spirit, which I've talked about before in another episode, where it's, I feel like, a collection of our spirits, of human spirits, because let's be real. We are spirits. We are spirits in flesh vessels going through life, experiencing, you know, death, trying to survive, trying to thrive. Spirit is all around us. Spirit is within us. All right, we've reached the portion of the podcast where I scour the internet and I try to answer a question. This one comes from Facebook. I really wish I'd have said which Facebook page I got it from, but I didn't. So I just know that it comes from Facebook. And it says this. It says, when hoodoo practitioners talk about spirit, capital S, what do they mean? I understand ancestors and the spirit of a root or herb, but I'm unsure of the singularly named spirit, capital S. When you do your conjure and you're performing tricks, jinxes, hexes, or curses, what or whom are you calling into the space for protection and guidance? I'm staying away from ATRs because I'm not initiated and I don't wish to be either. Okay, cool. So normally when a hoodoo or just a spiritualist in general says spirit with that capital S, it's a placement for God, like the Abrahamic God. It replaces that concept. As if to say they believe in God, they believe in a creator, they believe in an all-powerful being, but they do not follow the Christian God. They do not follow the Abrahamic God. So if you ask that person, you know, do you believe in God? They'll go, no, I believe in spirit. So it's all the same stuff without the Jesus. Normally. So it's taking all those divine spirits I talked about before, life, death, wealth, creativity, love, all of those divine spirits that are like archetypes, and placing them into one person, like one thing. So it's instead of the polytheistic view, which is what I have, even though, like I said, I don't believe in any one God per se. I don't follow any one God. But my view is a little more polytheistic compared, right? So because I believe that there's a spirit of life and a spirit of death and a spirit of wealth, right? So it's not one thing. This person, when they say spirit, they're taking the approach kind of like it's monotheistic. All of those things are one thing, right? So that's typically what they mean by spirit. It's a God replacement. They believe in a singular, all-powerful thing. They do not ascribe it to any religion. When you do conjure and you're performing tricks and hexes or curses, what or whom are you calling into the space for protection and guidance? So, that's a weird one. The question makes me feel more like it's witchcraft or Wiccan foundational thought, right? So the calling in of the corners, the calling in of the watchtowers for protection, right? But I think most of the time, a hoodoo practitioner, I'll speak for myself, when I do work, I'm not calling in things for protection. My space is protected, right? That's separate and already done. If I need guidance, I will, or if I'm petitioning a spirit for assistance, then I will choose the one that makes the most sense for my situation. So there might be hoodoos out there that are Catholic based and they call on saints. They're petitioning the saint, the spirit of that saint, etc., like a divine ancestor almost, to do what they do best. Most of the time we would say that we are consulting the ancestors, usually before work, as a pre-work thing. You crown yourself, you cover yourself with, you know, with power, and you would ask or petition an ancestor for assistance. I also will do the same with the divine spirits as archetypes. So I will, you know, call on life, giver of life. I will call on death, that which takes, right? Like I will call on those things before I do my work or during my work as a petition. I've heard people who are devotees and they will call on an Orisha or a Lawa or whoever during work. And I've also heard that, like, and I've heard that that's like they need to be called upon, they're here for us, etc. But the rhetoric is also that you cannot reach these divine spirits in any meaningful way. The Orisha or the Loa, you can't reach them in any meaningful way unless you are a priest or a priestess or initiated, or you have an initiant doing it for you. So I also don't touch it. She's I ain't the one. I don't touch it because it's like I said, I think it's important to have cultural context, to have cultural understanding, to understand the systems of those religions before you reach out to them, before you attempt to incorporate them in a way that's outside of their cultural understanding. So if you don't know, then you shouldn't do it. That's kind of how I feel. But typically, you reach for your ancestors. If you don't have a divine guiding spirit that is obvious to you, then it's your ancestors that you would ask for guidance or petition for assistance, or God or capital S spirit. And as far as protection is concerned, you don't need to call, like, you're not casting circles. You're not calling the corners. You don't need to call someone into space for protection. Your space needs to just be protected. And there's a whole podcast on protection if you're interested. So yeah. All right, we made it to the end. Congrats. Before we get out of here, cousin, I want to let you know that you deserve the world. You deserve peace and joy. Your spirit needs to be fed and nurtured. And we can do almost anything with what's around us, because there are spirits around us that we can utilize, cultivate to get through, to survive and to thrive. And if you call for your blessings, cousin, they will come to you. I'll see you guys next time.